mile. Like Tommy's. Lady, no offense, but you don't know anything, Charlie said. He was never all yours. Chapter 36. Janie thought she'd have that image in her mind forever. Noah lying on the hospital bed, pale but breathing, one hand holding the albuterol mask to his mouth, the other clutching what he had reached for first, which was Denise's hand. Denise was sitting next to him, holding the small hand in her own. Janie sat in the chair next to Denise. She thought about asking to take the other woman's seat by her son, but she couldn't risk upsetting Noah. At some point, Denise had loosened her hand a bit from Noah's and shifted, as if to offer Janie her rightful place by Noah's side. But Noah had grabbed her wrist, his eyes meeting hers over the mask. They regarded each other for a moment, like two horses recognizing each other across a field. And then Denise shrugged slightly and settled back again, placing her other hand over his. After 15 minutes or so of this, Janie couldn't bear it any longer. Noah, I'm going to be right outside. Just for a little while. Right outside that door, she'd said. And the two of them had turned their heads and looked at her as if they hadn't known she was in the room. Janie didn't want to leave him there like that, but she had to get out. She needed air. She started to back slowly out of the room. Mom? Janie and Denise both turned to him. He took the mask off. He looked at Janie. You coming back? Never had she thought that a sudden spark of fear in her own child's eyes would be something she could savor. But everything had been turned on its head this day. Of course, sweetie. I'll be back in a minute. I'll be right outside that door. Okie doke. He cast her a sleepy, contented grin. See you soon, Mommy Mom. Put the mask back on, sweetie. He settled the mask back on his face with the hand that wasn't holding on tightly to Denise. Then he gave her a thumbs up. Janie pulled the curtain and closed the door gently and left her palms there, resting her forehead against the door. One breath, then the next. That was how it was done, one breath, then the next. He's fine, you know. She turned. A gaunt old man was sitting on a chair in the hallway. It was Anderson. When had he become so frail?
They'll let him out soon, he added.
Yes. She sat down next to him, blinking up at the ceiling, at the small dark bodies of dead bugs trapped on the bottom of the bright bowl of light. One breath, then the next.
Quite a day, Anderson said.
I should go back in there. I don't even know that woman.
Noah does.
Silence.
Most of them forget with time, you know, Anderson said. Present life takes over.
Is it bad to hope for that? Anderson's rigid body seemed to soften. He patted her hand.
It's understandable.
When she closed her eyes, the bright oval of light shone inside her lids. She opened them. Her brain was roiling. That man. The one the police have? He's the one who killed Tommy?
Possibly.
Will Noah have to be there? At the trial? Anderson shook his head, a wry smile playing at the corners of his mouth.
A previous personality isn't much of a witness.
I guess you're right, she said. I still don't understand how they found him.
I expect it had to do with Noah.
She would ask later. She would find out later. There was only so much information a body could handle at one time. One breath, then the next. Anderson's back was straight as a rail, his hands in his lap. At attention still. "You don't have to wait here, you know," she said. "You can go to the hotel. Take a cab, get some rest."
"It's all right. We'll rest."
"On the day after today?"
"Tomorrow."
"Right, tomorrow." The word lingered in the air.
"And tomorrow?"
he murmured. "And tomorrow," she said, "creeps in this petty pace from day to day." He glanced at her, startled.
"To the last syllable of recorded time, and all our yesterdays have lighted fools the way to dusty death."
"You know your Shakespeare," she said. Perhaps he also had a Shakespeare-quoting mother. She felt all of a sudden as if her mother was in the room with them. Maybe she was. Could people be reborn and also be here, as spirits? But that was a question for another hour. Anderson smiled ruefully.
"Some words I remember."
"Everybody forgets words sometimes." She thought back to the way he seemed to substitute some words for others, the way the GPS had flummoxed him. "But it's not just that, is it?" He was silent for a moment.
"It's degenerative. Aphasia."
He smiled dryly.
"That word I can't forget."
"Oh." She felt it like the blow it was. "I'm so sorry, Jerry."
"There's more to life than memory, so they tell me."
"There's the present moment."
"Yes."
"Memory can be a curse," she said. She was thinking of herself, of Noah.
"It is what it is."
Silence.
"Maybe I will go, then."
He put his hands on his knees, as if willing himself to stand. "Actually, can you stay a few more minutes?" There was no way to keep the need from leaping out of her voice. His eyes seemed silver in the bright fluorescent light.
"All right."
"Thanks."
"Can I get you something?"
he said. "A cup of coffee?" She shook her head.
"Or if you're hungry, I could go to the... I could..."
"Jerry?"
"Yes?"
He looked... What was it he looked? For the first time, with her own desperation finally waning, she saw him as he was. How hard he had worked in his life, and with what courage. How tired he was now, and how deeply he felt he had failed. "Thank you," she said.
"For what?"
"For what you did for Noah." He nodded faintly. His eyes shimmered briefly, and he closed them. He settled deeper into the chair, stretching his long legs out and to the side, so as not to block traffic in the hallway. She felt the tension flowing out of him, leaving his body and moving out into the air. He leaned his head back against the wall next to hers, their hair, almost, but not quite, brushing against each other's. He let out a soft exhalation.
"You're welcome."
John McConnell, a retired New York City policeman working as a security guard, stopped at an electronics store after work one night in 1992. He saw two men robbing the store and pulled out his pistol. Another thief behind a counter began shooting at him. John tried to shoot back, and even after he fell, he got up and shot again. He was hit 6 times. One of the bullets entered his back and sliced through his left lung, his heart, and the main pulmonary artery. the blood vessel that takes blood from the right side of the heart to the lungs to receive oxygen. He was rushed to the hospital, but did not survive. John had been close to his family and had frequently told one of his daughters, Doreen, "No matter what, I'm always going to take care of you." 5 years after John died, Doreen gave birth to a son named William. William began passing out soon after he was born. Doctors diagnosed him with a condition called pulmonary valve atresia, in which the valve of the pulmonary artery has not adequately formed, so blood cannot travel through it to the lungs. In addition, one of the chambers of his heart, the right ventricle, had not formed properly as a result of the problem with the valve. He underwent several surgeries. Although he will need to take medication indefinitely, he has done quite well. William had birth defects that were very similar to the fatal wounds suffered by his grandfather. In addition, when he became old enough to talk, he began talking about his grandfather's life. One day when he was 3 years old, his mother was at home trying to work in her study when William kept acting up. Finally, she told him, "Sit down, or I'm going to spank you." William replied, "Mom, when you were a little girl and I was your daddy, you were bad a lot of times, and I never hit you." William talked about being his grandfather a number of times and discussed his death. He told his mother that several people were shooting during the incident when he was killed, and he asked a lot of questions about it. One time he said to his mother, "When you were a little girl and I was your daddy, what was my cat's name?" She responded, "You mean Maniac?" "No, not that one," William answered. "The white one." "Boston?" his mom asked. "Yeah," William responded. "I used to call him Boss, right?" That was correct. The family had two cats named Maniac and Boston, and only John referred to the white one as Boss. Jim B. Tucker, M.D., Life Before Life. Chapter 37. Bones don't lie. That's what the archaeologists say, and they're right. Bones don't make up stories because they want to believe them. They don't repeat something they overheard somewhere. They don't have ESP. They are verifiable, carrying in their fissures the truth of our flawed materiality and our uniqueness. The crack in the femur, the holes in the teeth. So there could be no greater evidence, to Anderson's way of thinking, than the bones positively identified as belonging to Tommy Crawford, which were discovered in an abandoned well in the woods, not far from the Clifford residence. Anderson stood next to Janie, Noah, and Tommy's family, looking down at the hole in the earth into which they had lowered an expensive box covered with expensive flowers, already wilting in the heat. He thought he ought to be observing the reactions of the subjects to these proceedings, but he wasn't. Instead, he was thinking that when his own time came, he wanted none of that for himself. Let them leave his hacked-up body on a mountaintop to disintegrate and feed the vultures, as the Tibetan monks did, until the corporeal part of Jerry Anderson was nothing but bones on a ledge. He was thinking it wouldn't be so very long now, that he would never let his body outlive his mind. The boy's father, Henry, was standing next to the hole, the shovel in his hands. He filled the spade and threw the dirt high over the coffin, the earth seeming to pause in midair and fall with a scattering thud, and then he scooped another shovelful without pausing until it seemed like one long continuous movement, the shoveling and falling earth and shoveling, his face slick with sweat. They all watched him. Noah, subdued, stood between Denise and Janie, holding Janie's hand. Charlie had an arm around his mother's shoulder. Of course, no amount of data could convince someone who wasn't open to being convinced. People came up with the answers they wanted, always did, always would. Anderson had tried to guard against this in his own work, hired researchers to check and recheck his data and colleagues to review his articles, urging the highest standards of skepticism, but it was inevitable there would be some bias. His colleagues were his colleagues. They had wanted to trust him. He had believed for so long that if he rid his work of even the slightest tinge of subjectivity, it was only a matter of time before his data was accepted. It was part of the battle he'd been fighting. Only now it was late morning, and the air was warm, and the scent of the soil was rich and fresh, and he felt the fight beginning to lift out of him. Let people believe what they wanted to believe. Detective Ludden, for instance. The answer that made the most sense to Detective Ludden was ESP. It never ceased to amaze Anderson. Here was this rational professional man with his razor-sharp intellect and world-weary outlook, grasping at some idea of Noah's super-extrasensory perception as inherently more likely than that some fragment of Tommy's consciousness might continue in some fashion after his death. A samosa vendor on the streets of New Delhi, a taxi driver in Bangkok, would laugh themselves silly at such naivete. But psychic powers were a phenomenon the police departments in America had at least had some experience with. They had all heard stories of clues being generated this way. Some had even employed psychics themselves from time to time. So little Noah Zimmerman was an amazingly powerful psychic, intuiting the last moments of Tommy Crawford's life. Whatever floats your boat, detective. And he had to admit, once he had made his peace with that aspect of the case, the detective was surprisingly game. Before they had even positively identified the remains, he had interviewed Noah, taken careful notes and used them to fill in the blanks to elicit a more comprehensive confession. Not that the killer was holding back, but the detective wanted the facts presented as fully and clearly as possible. Anderson understood this. He wanted to know what happened. And isn't that what we all want? Everything squared, more or less, with the evidence. The bones, the bullet-shattered ribs. The father wanted the killer dead, but the mother felt that there wasn't much point in that, and the prosecutors had taken the death penalty off the table since he had confessed and had been a young teenager when the crime had occurred. And after all, he may as well work through his guilt in this life. No point in bleeding it on into the next. So Anderson had agreed with Denise on the uselessness of the death penalty, although she still refused to use the word reincarnation. Tommy's spirit, that's how she put it. Whatever floats your boat, my friend. Whatever floats your boat. He had been thinking more seriously about karma lately. He had never focused on it in his work. It was hard enough to find verification that consciousness continued without getting mixed up in the complexity of ethical ramifications across time. But occasionally he had run searches of the data, trying to see if there was a connection between the kinds of lives people led and their next lives. There was nothing conclusive, although a small fraction of those in peaceful or affluent conditions remembered previous lives in which they'd meditated or behaved in a saintly way. He'd had his own thoughts lately, though, that ignorance and fear and anger, like trauma, could perhaps be transferred from one life to the next, and that it might take multiple lifetimes to overcome them. And if anger and fear could persist, then also, of course, stronger emotions could as well, such as love. Was that what drew some people back to reincarnate within their own families? Was that what caused some children to remember their past connections? And if so, then perhaps this phenomenon, these children's memories he had studied so carefully, was not against the laws of nature after all. Perhaps it was the foundational law of nature that they were proving, what he'd been documenting and analyzing for over 30 years without knowing it, the force of love. He shook his head. His brain was going soft, maybe. Or maybe not. He kept so many of these questions at bay all these years, and now they whirled around him, touching him with something like awe, on their way to someplace else.
Chapter 38. Denise would never get over it. She knew that. Tommy's bones at the bottom of the well. She and Henry had spent some time with those bones. When the police had finished testing and tagging and photographing them, the funeral parlor had given them time before the burial. She'd clutched them to her chest, run her fingertips along the smooth sockets that had held his shining eyes. There,
but not there. Some part of her wanted those bones, wanted to put the femurs under her pillow at night when she went to sleep, to carry his skull around in her purse so she'd be with him always. She understood now how people went crazy and did crazy things. But another part of her knew that it wasn't Tommy. He wasn't there. Tommy's bones. Where Noah had said he'd drowned. She supposed that was proof, if that's what you were looking for, but she wasn't looking. Somehow it had ceased to matter to her. Yet how could it not matter whether this boy carried some little piece of Tommy deep inside of him, some fragments of his love? Tommy's love for her surviving inside of Noah. That was something, wasn't it? But surely we all carried some little piece of each other inside of us. So what did it matter whether the memories belonging to her boy existed inside this other one? Why were we all hoarding love, stockpiling it, when it was all around us, moving in and out of us like the air? If only we could feel it. She knew that most people couldn't follow her where she'd gone, would think, like Henry, that she'd gone off the deep end. How could anyone understand what she herself didn't understand? Her heart. Something had happened to it. That's what she would say if she thought he could listen. She'd known it had been cracked for good, shattered, beyond repair. But she hadn't counted on it cracking open. She would never get over losing Tommy. She knew that. Neither could she go back to the person she'd been. There was no resistance left, nothing held back. After a lifetime of holding back, she could feel every stray breeze penetrating to her core. It was terrifying, but there was nothing to be done. Her heart was cracked open now, and the whole world could come on through. Henry pulled her aside after the burial. The others were standing by their cars in the heat, giving the two of them a moment to grieve alone. They stood by the turned earth and scattered flowers, that surreal yet familiar tableau, which called out, "Believe it." Denise squinted her eyes in the sun at all the graves running in orderly rows and the trees arching over them, trees and stone and earth and sky as far as she could see. Henry took her hand in his, and she felt her skin jump with the relief of feeling his flesh against hers again. He squeezed his fingers and said, "I'm not coming to the house." Everyone was gathering at her house for the reception after the funeral. She had hired a caterer. She felt too overwhelmed at the moment to handle Henry's resistance. He had to come. "Just for a little while, Henry, please." He was holding her hand, but he was glowering. "I can't stand to be in the same room with those people." She knew which people he meant. "They won't bother you. It doesn't matter, Henry." He let go of her hand.
"What do you mean it doesn't matter?"
He raised his voice.
"And it doesn't matter that they're crazy. That doesn't matter either, I suppose."
She had hoped that if he could spend a few moments with Noah, it might be good for both of them. Henry might see what was there to be seen and take it whatever way he wished. And she knew Henry's coldness hurt Noah. During the funeral service, she'd noticed the boy glancing up at him with wounded eyes. "It might help you to talk to him, and I think it would help the child."
"I cannot believe that you, of all people, Denise!"
Henry's voice was raspy. He bent his head down, and she wanted to touch that familiar haze of black and gray she knew so well, but stopped herself. His eyes, when he looked up again, were beseeching.
"I know it's hard, it's brutal," he said. "But I never thought you'd fall for something like this. Maybe I should have known the way you thought Tommy'd still come back to us. And now you found yourself a way to continue to believe that, didn't you, in the face of everything?"
You think it's all a fantasy?
I think...
You're doing everything you can to believe Tommy is still alive.
You think I don't want that too? You think I don't look for him everywhere? You think that I haven't been seeing my son in every child's face in a crowd? But we need to hang on to reality.
Reality. The word stung her like a slap.
You think I don't know Tommy's dead?
We're standing at my son's grave.
I know he's dead. I know he's not coming back.
Do you?
Not as Tommy, but...
She groped for the words.
There's some piece of him here. Oh, Henry, I don't know how to say it. And even if I did, you wouldn't believe me, but I swear, if you spent some time with him, the doctor...
Henry snorted. Dr. Anderson says the boy can score baseball games.
Nobody taught him that. You taught him that, Henry.
Henry was shaking his head.
Otherwise, how could he know something like that without being taught?
It was not the argument she meant to have. But the real argument wasn't made up of facts, no matter how many Dr. Anderson collected. The facts were important, she knew that. But she also knew no long list of traits or statements was going to sway this man. She didn't know what would.
I don't know, Henry said.
She could tell from the heaviness in his voice that she was losing him, that his stamina for the conversation was running out. If only she could find the right words. She felt keenly that her marriage, what was left of it, was hanging in the balance. Henry turned to her, the lines of his face sagging, as if grief had increased the pull of gravity.
I know my son is dead. I know it because I've held his bones in my hands. And I know it in my soul, if there is such a thing, which I highly doubt.
To be honest, Denise, I'm disappointed in you. You always were one of the most reasonable people I knew. And now you're leaving me alone with it. Our son is dead and you're leaving me alone with it to go listen to some crazy little white boy.
He's not crazy, if you could only...
You're killing me with this shit, you know that? You're murdering me right here where I'm standing.
You've lost your damn mind.
She looked at the man, who was still her husband. He was suffering and she couldn't help him. She was making it worse. She put her hand on his shoulder and felt his muscles tense beneath her fingers, the pain running from his body to hers like water finding a new vessel. Maybe so. Her thoughts were not her thoughts, that much was true. Henry's eyes softened. Denise felt the relief rising in her chest.
We can get you some help, niece.
He put his big arm around her waist. They were holding each other now, swaying slightly.
Makes sense with all this.
He motioned at the grave, the cemetery.
It's understandable.
I see that now.
We'll find you a new doctor, if necessary. I never did like that Ferguson.
A breeze took up, whipped around them. She leaned back into her husband's strong arms and let herself fall into that familiar comfort. She'd missed it. She'd missed him. The lilies on Tommy's grave moved to and fro in the wind, as if they were shaking their heads. The too sweet smell of flowers fought in her nostrils with the heavy smell of upturned earth. Underneath the earth, the box, the bones, Tommy's bones. Not Tommy, though. He was everywhere, connected to everything, including the wind, including Noah. She didn't know how that could be, but she couldn't pretend otherwise. Not even for Henry. She released herself from his grasp and squatted down, letting some of the dirt fall through her fingers.
I'm sorry, Henry. I don't want to leave you alone with it. I truly don't.
I miss him too, every second of every day. She scooped up another handful and let it trickle down, a dry rain beneath her fingers. She thought of Tommy's face. She concentrated on his smile.
She couldn't look at Henry. But Noah's not crazy. He has some of Tommy in him. Some of Tommy's memories and some of his love for you, too. She started to say, turning, but Henry's wide, receding back was already moving away from her. Chapter 39. Every funeral reception was different, Janie supposed. She hadn't been to many of them. The Jews also sat Shiva, a different sort of party, albeit with the same theme. And some people, like Tommy Crawford, had a wake. That event had taken place the night before, in a hushed, crowded room in the funeral home. She and Noah had lasted only a few moments in that room, staring at that shiny wooden box covered with flowers, the casket holding Tommy's bones, the photograph of the child propped right next to it. Noah had stared at the picture, the smooth brown skin, the mischievous grin.
"That's me!"
Noah had yelped.
"That's me!"
She'd had to hurry him out of there. Heads were turning in their direction, muttering. She caught sight of Tommy's father, glowering at them, as she pulled him from the room and down the corridor and out into the night. That was a wake. But why did they call it that? Wake. Like the rocking waters after a passing boat. The instability that followed some major event, wake like that? Or wake the imperative? Wake up, Janie. She speared some cubes of turkey with a toothpick and put them on a plate, with some potato salad and a pickle for her, and some cheese and pineapple for Noah, balancing the plate on her open palm. The room was filled with people she didn't know wearing dark suits and dresses, people who had known Tommy. Everyone chatting, catching up. Tommy had been dead for years now, and the freshness of shock and sorrow had transformed, turned inward. A group of teenagers clustered together by the food table, awkward in their suits. They didn't know what to do with their plates either. They held them shakily in their hands, shoveling unwieldy spoonfuls of potato salad into their mouths. Denise passed by, calling out, "Thanks for coming, thanks for coming." She was on fire. There were no other words for it. Janie would say it was probably grief, if she had to call it something. But you couldn't look away from her. The room seemed to slow. The clink of cutlery, the murmurs. Over now, at rest. A river of sound flowing through the room. Noah was standing across the room from her, next to Charlie, the lizard on his shoulder. The big teen's head angled downward. The sun sharp in the living room windows, glancing off Noah's hair. A warm day. The heat glistening on their relaxed faces. A sickly sheen on the surface of the potato salad on Charlie's plate. Noah, talking to Charlie. Telling Charlie something, one more thing she'd never know. A droplet in that ocean. "Wake up, Janie." A line from an Emily Dickinson poem floated back to her. "As lightning to the children eased with explanation kind, the truth must dazzle gradually, or every man be blind." The heat of the bodies in the room. Noah standing in the sunlight. There was nowhere to sit. The room was sliding before her, the walls shooting up into the sky. She squatted on the carpet, her plate in her lap. So many strangers. Old people hugging, shaking their heads. The glum, embarrassed teenagers. Anderson standing by the wall watching. Denise, Charlie, Noah. She was the only one here who hadn't known Tommy. Except for Anderson and Noah, of course, who you really couldn't count. The giggles came scrabbling up her throat like hungry mice, up and out. She covered her face with her hands. But it was okay, actually, because she wasn't really laughing. She was crying. She had the tears to prove it, right there on the styrofoam plate, dripping onto the cheese squares. And that was okay at a funeral reception, maybe preferable. Hopefully the people there thought she had known Tommy. Maybe they thought she was his piano teacher. She looked like a piano teacher, didn't she? Though she couldn't play a note. Maybe she should learn. Noah could teach her the theme to the Pink Panther. Her nose running against her fingers. The slickness of snot, the salty splash of tears.
You all right?
Denise stood there with a plate in each hand. She looked up.
Come with me.
Denise's bedroom was sunny. The curtains were pulled all the way back, and Janie had to shade her eyes from the glare. She sat on the bed. She was hiccuping, and her eyes were tearing. Denise brought her a box of tissues.
I could give you a pill, but it might knock you out.
I think I'm already knocked out. Denise nodded curtly. She seemed efficient now, a brisk nurse.
Do you want some ibuprofen?
It wasn't what she needed, but she'd take it. That'd be good. She lay down on the bed and tried to quiet herself as Denise bustled around in the bathroom. Then she bolted to her feet. Oh, Noah, I need to get back.
Charlie's looking after him.
She was back in the room with a pill in her hand and a glass of water in the other.
And that doctor is there?
Yes, but he's fine. Sit. She sat. The light in the room was blinding. She took the pill she didn't need and swallowed it. It was not pain that was causing her lightheadedness. It was reality. She was sitting on this too busy flowered bedspread in this other woman's room. That was real. And the sunlight in her eyes was real. And here was this other woman who was also real. And the reality of the situation was also bigger than that. But what did she do with it? Even the thought of it made her head spin. I'm sorry. The words emerged without thought. For what? Denise's face revealed nothing. To take you out of the party? The word hovered between them painfully. Janie winced. I mean, the wake? No, that's not right. I mean, wake up. Denise took the glass back from her. Charlie's good with kids, she went on, as if trying to draw her back to normalcy with her patter. I've been trying forever to get him to do some babysitting around here. Make a little money instead of siphoning off my wallet for God knows what. Comic books and junk food. And video games, mostly. And that's only the stuff I know about.
Wow.
Janie tried to pull her mind around to what this woman was saying. Having a teenager, that must be tough. I'm just trying to make it through preschool at this point. Charlie's a good kid, but he hates to study, and he's dyslexic on top of it, so... She shook her head ruefully. Dyslexia. When do you know if they have that? She hadn't thought about that, yet another thing to worry about. Denise handed her a tissue and watched while Janie blew her nose. Usually around first grade, when they start to read, that's when the learning disabilities start to become evident. Oh, I see. She tried to remember if Noah had any issues recognizing letters. He seemed pretty good at that. Was Tommy also...
Just Charlie.
Her voice was abrupt. Janie brooded on it for a moment. There was a hereditary connection, wasn't there? But could you inherit things from the family of your previous incarnation? Her head began to swirl again. She took a deep breath. Where did Tommy and Noah begin? What did Henry and Denise have to do with it? She wanted to ask Denise, but didn't have the courage. I suppose by the time they are teenagers, you know them pretty well inside and out. For the first time, Denise cracked a smile. Are you kidding me? I don't know half of what's in Charlie's head most of the time. He just disappeared on me. The words pricked the air. Her face closed up again. Janie wanted to fill up the space between them but couldn't find the right thing to say.
She cast her eyes around the room. There was not much to look at except pictures, school pictures of Charlie and Tommy on the wall. She recognized the one from the newspaper article. Others on the bedside table. A framed snapshot of a toddler, lurching across the floor toward a beautiful young woman with gold hoop earrings and open arms. That was the day Charlie learned to walk, Denise said simply. She was standing right next to her, looking over her shoulder. He went from one to two steps to walking clear across the room. It looks like he's walking to me, but he was really walking to his brother right behind me. He idolized that boy. Janie looked again at the picture. She hadn't realized that the woman in the photo was Denise. She picked up the one next to it. A picture of Tommy jumping from a wooden raft. It was a snapshot, but the camera had captured the sun sparkling on the water, the rough-hued wood of the raft. Tommy was caught in midair, legs splayed. She recognized the pure elation on his face. She knew that expression. She couldn't look away. Denise glanced at the photograph. That was by the lake house. We used to go there every summer. Her voice was wistful. Tommy loved that place. I know, Janie said. Noah talked about it. Did he? Really? He told his teachers it was his favorite vacation, Janie said. The words hovered in her mind a moment, and she waited for the jealousy to follow. But she didn't feel any jealousy looking at that picture that seemed to contain the distillation of Noah's joy. She felt something else flooding through her. Gratitude. He had had a good life here, with Denise. For the first time she realized that she couldn't separate that from the loving, exuberant boy who had been born to her. Denise gently took the picture from her hands and placed it back on the bedside table. He used to cry and cry when we had to go home, she mused. When we going back there, Mama? When we going back? In the car all the way back drove us all plumb nuts. I can imagine, Janie said. He gets very attached. He's always been that way. But what did always mean? When did always begin? We hadn't been there in years. Denise's eyes clouded. Maybe. The idea shimmered there in the room with them. A mirage of a lake with a blonde boy jumping into it. Janie averted her eyes from the child in the photo. It was too much to contemplate. The fantasy faded before either of them had dared to name it. You seem pretty calm about all this stuff, Janie said. Calm. Denise chuckled. Well, we don't know each other, do we?
No, we don't.
There was a burst of laughter in the living room.
I guess I should go back in there, Denise said. There's a lot of people in my house. And they are having too much fun. This is a funeral, after all.
The smile holding up the edges of her lips seemed fixed there by sheer will. She smoothed her hair back toward its bun, though nothing had gone astray. Okay, but just one more thing. The woman stood there, waiting. Janie felt all her questions bubbling up within her. She couldn't hold them back any longer. What if Noah doesn't get over this? What if he wants to be here all the time, just like he wanted to be at the lake? Denise pressed her lips together. Your son will be all right. His mama loves him like crazy.
Mommy, Mom, she said.
What?
I'm Mommy, Mom.
You were Mama. That's what he called you.
Denise frowned at her warily. I shouldn't have said that, Janie thought. But it was too late now.
And what about your son? She said.
Charlie will be all right, too, Denise said.
but she didn't sound certain. She sounded like she wanted to get out of there. I meant your other son. It wasn't the right way to say it. She didn't know if there was a right way. What do you think of it all, is what she wanted to say. What does it mean? It was as if Janie had stepped on a broken toe. Denise's eyes flared.
Tommy's gone.
I know, but no. But Noah
is someone else, she said fiercely. Her eyes shone. Your son.
Yes, yes, he is, but you yourself saw. Didn't you see? You said you did that his memories seemed real. They were real, weren't they? And the bones were... There was no way to articulate what she wanted to say. She shook her head. Denise stood wincing in the sunlight that sliced across her face.
So...
Janie continued, miserably. She couldn't stop now.
Is it some comfort?
Does it help? Denise said nothing. She was standing in a ray of sunlight filled with whirling dust. She seemed both transfixed and utterly at sea, and Janie was suddenly ashamed of herself for asking.
I don't know, Denise said, slowly.
It's just that you seem like you know something.
Really?
Denise started laughing.
'Cause I was kind of hoping you did.
And then they were both laughing, the kind of hard, helpless laughter that made Janie's stomach ache, cracking up at this joke the universe had played on both of them. The moment lasted longer than Janie had thought possible until finally they both stepped back, gasping. Denise had tears running down the corners of her eyes, and she ran her fingers over her cheeks.
Oh, my. They'll think I've been sobbing my eyes out in here, she said.
The words fell like a shadow across the room.
I won't tell them.
Better not.
They glanced at each other. They were connected, and yet they were each on their own with this. I guess I better get going, Janie said reluctantly, before Noah eats all the brownies. Denise wiped her eyes with a tissue.
I'll let him enjoy himself.
You've forgotten what a 4-year-old on a sugar rush is like. They turn into tiny maniacs.
No, I haven't forgotten.
Her face was cool and dry. It was hard to imagine she'd been crying with laughter a moment before. Janie opened the door and let the human sound engulf them.
That's good, Janie said.
It was something to say. Janie lingered at the open door and listened to the noisy room where Noah was sitting. For some reason, she felt nervous about going back to him. I don't know who he is anymore, she said. Or maybe it's myself, I don't know. She thought perhaps it wasn't right to say these things, especially to Denise. But she didn't know who else she could say them to. Or what was right anymore. Denise wiped her dry face with a new tissue, tossed it into the waste paper basket, and looked up.
You're here, she said quietly. And Noah's in my living room, waiting for you. Isn't that enough?
Janie nodded, pierced by the truth of it. Of course it was enough. She stepped toward the room where her son was.
It does help, Denise said abruptly.
Janie turned. Denise's eyes were full of emotion.
It does. Not with missing him, not with that part, but...
Her voice trailed off. They stood together in silence, the air between them alive with the wonder of everything they didn't know. Noah looked up when Janie came back into the room. He was sitting on the sofa. Always those blue eyes tore right through her, touched some part of her nothing else got near. She settled down next to him. They watched the teenager standing around the dining room table, picking at their potato salad and muttering to each other, their bodies moving jerkily in ill-fitting suits.
"Can we go now, Mommy Mom?"
Noah said. "Don't you want to spend some time with Tommy's friends?" He shook his head.
"They're all so old."
"Oh, that's sick," one of the teenagers said, and they burst into laughter that stopped abruptly, as if remembering where they were. She wished she could do something to ease the tension and sadness on Noah's face, but what could she do? She thought she could fix him, but that had always been beyond her power.
"Everything's different," he said.
"Yes, I guess it is." His mouth twisted. "Oh, honey, I'm sorry." "Did you think it would be the same?" Noah nodded.
"Are we going home soon?"
"You mean to Brooklyn?" "Yes."
"Oh."
He blinked a few times, looking around the room. She followed his gaze. She hadn't taken the room in fully before. She had been too shocked to see it properly. It was nice enough, this interior of a small suburban ranch house. Someone had filled it with comfy brown furniture, piled with pillows in complimentary blue. An upright piano stood under the stairs. It was a bit banged up at the edges, but the wood glowed. The rectangular picture window looked out on a leafy street. The mantel on the brick fireplace was populated with mementos and figurines, a curled stone cat, some candles, a small wooden angel holding a wire butterfly, a baseball trophy. It was nothing so extraordinary, this house of Noah's dreams and her nightmares. It was just a house. He had felt loved here. "We can't stay here, Noah."
"I want to go home, but I want to stay here, too."
She pictured their own apartment, his cozy bedroom, the tigers on the bureau, the stars. "I know."
"Why can't I have both?"
"I don't know. We just have to do the best we can with what we have. We're in this life now, together." He nodded again, as if he had already known this, and crawled into her lap. He leaned his head back against her chin.
"I'm so glad I came to you."
She turned him around so she could see his face. She thought she had known all the different phases of Noah, the moody and bereaved Noah, the freaked out Noah, the boisterous, affectionate child she knew best. But this was something new. She kept her voice level.
"What do you mean?"
"After I left the other place."
"What place?"
"The place where I went after I died." He said it simply. His eyes were pensive and unusually bright, as if he caught a fish unexpectedly, and was admiring the silver scales shining in the sun.
"And what was that like?"
A simple question, yet the answer held worlds inside of it. She held her breath, waiting for his answer. He shook his head.
"Mom, you can't describe that place."
"And you were there for a while?" He thought about it.
"I don't know how long. Then I saw you and I came here."
"You saw me? Where did you see me?"
"On the beach."
"You saw me on the beach?"
"Yes, you were standing there, I saw you, and then I came to you."
Even when she thought the limits of her mind had been pushed as far as they could go, there was always another level to the vastness. He pressed his forehead against hers.
"I'm so glad you're my mom this time," Noah said.
"Me too," Janie said. It was all she needed.
"Hey, Mommy Mom,"
he whispered. "Guess what time it is?"
"I don't know, Bug. What time is it?"
"It's time for another brownie." He pulled his head back, his eyes brimming with his customary mischievous joy, and she knew that the other child was gone for now. He'd thrown the fish back into the ocean.
Chapter 40. After the guests had left, and Janie and Anderson had helped Denise and Charlie put away the leftover food, and Janie had wiped the table down while Denise vacuumed up the brownie crumbs, when the place at last was neat again, the subjects of Anderson's last case sat on the couch, side by side, Charlie and Denise and Noah and Janie. Anderson settled into the armchair across from them. He felt the chair holding his body. He let himself sink into it. It was dusk. The five of them were silent, strangers bound with strangeness.
"So you're leaving tomorrow?" Denise said at last.
"We are."
There was a note of apology in Janie's voice.
"Our flights are in the afternoon."
They had had their visit. They had been interviewed by the police. They had attended the funeral. Now there was life to be resumed. Jobs, responsibilities. For all but him, Anderson thought. Oddly, the thought didn't trouble him. He wondered why.
"What do we do now?"
Janie asked Anderson. Everyone looked at him. There was some more paperwork to be done. The paperwork had once mattered to him greatly, but didn't anymore. Anderson shrugged.
"We just leave here, then? That's it? We don't..."
She looked at Denise.
"Keep in touch?"
"There can be visits."
"If you like."
He smiled.
"It's up to you."
"Oh."
Janie looked around the living room.
"Do you think that's a good idea?"
"It's up to you,"
Anderson said again. It sounded flippant, even to his own ears. He was experiencing an emotion that was unusual for him. Was this what relaxation felt like?
"I could visit you,"
Denise said suddenly to Janie.
"I could come to Brooklyn."
Janie looked relieved.
"Oh, that would be nice, wouldn't it, Noah?"
"Not right away, of course," Denise added quickly.
"I mean, I think we all need a little time. But I'd like to come and see where you live someday,"
she said to Noah.
"To see your room. Could I do that?"
He nodded shyly.
"So, it's settled then," Janie said.
Anderson watched them. Everything was settled, and nothing was. He knew that. Things would change. Noah would change. Anderson would need to follow up, of course. Yet he had no hunger for it. Maybe the connections would hold, and maybe they wouldn't, or they would transform into other ways of being. He hadn't realized how much he missed silence. They sat for a long time this way, the sunlight shifting into a deeper, heavier light, Noah quiet between Denise and Janie. Anderson lifted his face to soak in the last rays of sun like a sleepy animal.
"I think we need to get back to the hotel now, honey,"
Janie said to Noah at last, stirring all of them.
"It's getting late."
Noah stretched.
"I want to take my bath here,"
he said drowsily. Janie started in her seat.
"You want to take a bath?"
He pushed out his lower lip.
"I want a bath here, in the pink bathtub, with her."
He pointed at Denise, who shrugged a little and looked to Janie for direction.
"Oh."
Anderson watched the resistance rise in Janie, and then he felt her let it go.
"All right,"
Janie said.
"And you can give me a bath next time, okay, Mommy Mom?"
She hesitated only briefly, and then she grinned right back at him.
"Sure, Noe. Whatever you want."
Chapter 41. Noah wanted a bath, so Denise was giving him one. That was the task, the last of this long day, and then she could rest. She had buried one child today, what was left of his body, and now she was going to bathe another. Another child. That was how she thought about it to herself at that moment, and how it seemed to her. As she smiled at the boy and set him on the lid of the toilet with one of Charlie's old Garfield comic books, while she rummaged around in the bathroom closet for some bubble bath. There was a Mr. Bubble bottle in the back. She had used it when her boys were little, and there was a bit left, so she had kept it, years past the time of her children's baths, the way people keep such things.